The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another spring training edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Going to be going over some observations from this weekend. Walker Buehler looked extremely good in his Sunday debut. Masataki Yoshida swinging a pretty good bat early on. And then we'll get into some Roman Anthony comments in regards to a possible long-term extension. So some stuff to get to. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Jeremy Schilling, Nick Diamond. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing well, Terry.
Doing well as well.
You know, before we get started, I can't remember if I've said this recently, at least on a podcast, but I've got like a raging case of baseball fever, and I haven't for a long time. Last winter, I never got it at all. It was a very underwhelming winter. We got Giolito, but then we lost him almost right away, right after camp broke. When the season started, I wasn't excited. It was just like, all right, we're going to be busy. And that was about it.
Yeah, I texted into the war room, I think the day after Bregman signed, like, guys, I forgot what this feels like. I'm excited for the Boston Red Sox season this year. And then, Terry, I think you came in and echoed those sentiments. But it's every day I'm thinking about baseball. It's on local sports radio. There's a buzz around the team, and it's not necessarily for the first time. It's optimistic, excitement. Fans are excited. I can't wait for opening day. I got tickets, I think on the 13th to go see him play up in Jupiter. So I haven't done that in a long time either. So, you know, just excited. Can't wait. Probably my first time being excited since 2018.
Nick.
I'm always excited coming around this time of the year. I'm not really big into any other sports. You know, I used to be big into football when I was a little kid, but not really much anymore. Hockey doesn't get me going as much as it used to either. So it's baseball only for me, but this year it's extra exciting. I guess since Jeremy just said 2018, 2019, I was still super excited coming off the World Series win. And I thought there was a chance to repeat. It just didn't happen. Kind of like a World Series hangover. And then in 2020, they blew it all up. So ever since 2020, it's been all downhill. I'm kind of feeling the same way. I'm always excited around this time, but this year I'm super, super excited. I think we have a chance to win the division, at least make the playoffs. So I'm as excited as ever, at least since 2019. And I'm excited to at least get into opening day and see what happens. You know, like, anything can happen, injuries can happen, but I'm excited. I think this team has a chance to at least make the playoffs.
Everyone looks good. Like, there's nothing scary going on as far as injuries. You'd like to have Crawford healthy, but he was your number six starter anyway. And then, you know, Giolito hasn't really been ramped up yet. I think he threw his live BP on Friday. Brian Bayo had a very encouraging side session, and he's expected to make his first turn through the rotation. So that's another good development in the last few days. And the three pitchers that you absolutely need to be healthy are, you know, Crochet, Buehler, and Tanner Houck. If those three make 27 to 30 starts, you're good. I don't see how you miss the postseason you know, with all the depth that you have. And you could still make a move at the deadline with all this surplus that we have.
Yeah, I mean, I think 27 to 30 is perfect because at various points, including using the All-Star break, they should look to either skip starts or extend the rest in between starts. I think they should do it once early, use the All-Star break, and maybe one more time in August so people are ready to go and healthy in September.
You mentioned the depth. Even with Bayo possibly missing a start or two at the beginning of the year, Cutter Crawford looks like he's definitely going to miss a while. I'm very happy with what we've seen with Quinn Priester and Richard Fitz in the last few days, because, I mean, Richard Fitz got up to 99. I know that was just a shorter outing. That might not be sustainable over five, six, seven innings, but very encouraging, better than he has been. Same with Quinn Priester. I know that was a kind of a deadline deal that we kind of made fun of at the time, but it's looking okay at the moment. Like, I'm comfortable with those two guys starting games, at least in April. I mean, going later on in the season, I need everybody healthy, but the depth is better than it's ever have been, so I'm happy right now.
So on that topic, Nick, are you comfortable with Fitz if he's not one of the first the five guys in the rotation? Do you see him having a role in the bullpen if he has 99?
I don't think they put him in the bullpen just because he has options, but I think they probably should if he's throwing 99. I would if I was in charge, but probably wouldn't.
I would let it ride with him for now. I mean, that was an exciting development, but you look at his outing on Friday, two innings. He gave up two hits but struck out three. You know, I mean, he could be a bona fide starter. When we acquired him in the Verdugo deal, all the nerds said that his ceiling was of a number four. So, I mean, suddenly it looks like it could be a little higher.
I think the biggest issue was the lack of swing and miss. And in two innings, he had nine swing and misses, which is huge. I mean, like, I think Tanner Houck had 18 or 19 in seven innings, or what was it? I think he had 19 in his nine-inning complete game. So that's, like, a big deal to have nine in two innings. So I think that's what a lot of people were excited about yesterday. I mean, it's still a small sample size in spring training, so we can't get super excited about it. But it's something that he's never proved before, so it's been a big jump.
You know, you look ahead to the next winter, and you're still going to have Crochet. Most likely not Buehler. You're going to have Sandoval next year. Houck is controllable for the foreseeable future. But you go into every winter wanting to target one big arm. And I'm just wondering, like, maybe we don't have to do that. I don't know. It's so early, but we've never had, you know, this type of depth in the minors before. So we'll see how it shakes out. Let's go ahead and get into today's game. The Red Sox beat the Mets 6-4. One of the big takeaways, Walker Buehler makes his debut. Doesn't give up a run, pitched two innings, struck out four. And two of those were, you know, swinging strike threes. So looks very good. Extremely encouraging. And I've been the biggest Walker Buehler guy on the crew and, you know, been the most optimistic about him. I don't have much to go on other than, you know, he was pretty stout for most of the postseason, but that's exactly what you wanted to see today.
Yeah, he looked, I didn't see it live. I saw highlights. He looked in total control, you know, like he's expecting the results. So very encouraging. You know, we're going to count on him. Like you mentioned, Terry as a top of the rotation guy. So pitch with confidence and, you know, hopefully he continues to stay healthy and pitch with that demeanor.
Slotting into it right now, he's probably a three-hole guy. Crochet, Houck, Buehler. And as long as he's healthy, I think he's going to produce. I think he's going to live up to the $21 million contract we gave him. I think he wants to prove that he's still at least the number two arm in this league. He might not be the Cy Young contender like he was 4 or 5 years ago when he was finishing second and third in the Cy Young, but I still think he's a great arm. I think he knows he's still a good arm. And as long as he's healthy, he's going to produce. And I think he'll have like a 3.7, 3.5 ERA, and he'll be a good pitcher in our rotation. So as long as he's healthy, he's going to produce. I think if he has 30 starts, 27 starts, like you said, 27 to 30 starts, I think that's perfect.
I think the ceiling could be higher. You know, I think he can return to being a top of the rotation guy. And perhaps I'm jumping the gun here. And if I am, so be it. You know, it's refreshing to speak positively about this rotation, as we were saying. But, you know, Garrett Crochet is going to be the sexy Cy Young pick, but Buehler was a perennial contender for it. So I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if he comes out of nowhere and makes a run at it as well.
Well, I mean, he's betting on himself. He took the 1 year deal, and guys that have that mindset, these are the career years. This is the year to have a career year to go get that last big multi-year contract. And I expect him to get it, and I expect him to pitch well, as you guys have said as well.
Two of his outs today that were not K's were via the ground ball. So yeah, so he didn't rank too highly last year as far as ground balls. But if that's something that does develop, I mean, that's exactly what you want to see. You know, in a hitter friendly park like Fenway, if you can strike guys out and you can get ground balls, that's exactly what you want in your rotation. But he was the guy I wanted. You know, he was my non splashy target. You know, the splashy guy ended up being Crochet. But man, this is going to be fun. It's going to be a fun season. Another encouraging development today, Masataka Yoshida went 2 for 3, drove in 3 runs. One was on a ground rule double. He drove in Casas and maybe Trevor Story. I forget who that other run was. And then in his next at bat, hit kind of a soft single to center field. Trevor Story was on second, came home on that hit. So it's good to see him swinging a good bat. He did have shoulder surgery. I don't really know what to expect, but you got to salvage him somehow if you're not able to trade him. And it was nice to see.
One thing I want to say is Alex Bregman has played nothing besides third base, which makes me believe Rafael Devers is your everyday DH. And it doesn't matter how well Masataka Yoshida is swinging at, if Rafael Devers is your everyday DH, you're not beating out Rafael Devers. So right now I think it's hoping you get some trade value up. That's kind of how I see it, is if he goes 2 for 3 every day, then hopefully somebody gets injured in another organization and they want to get a hitter named Masataka Yoshida. That's kind of all I see him right now is, like, I don't think Alex Bregman's playing second base. I don't think Devers is playing third until they prove otherwise, that they put Alex Bregman at second base in a position he's supposed to be learning brand new. I just don't see it happening until they put him there. So it doesn't really matter what Masataka Yoshida does, in my opinion.
Well, first of all, great point. If Bregman was planning to play second base opening day, it makes no sense not to have him there getting reps. It's a different feel around the bag, turning double plays, the timing with the shortstop. It makes absolutely no sense. So I think you're right on the head. I am rooting for Yoshida to hit and increase his value to something where we can move him just to get the money off the books, even if we have to eat some of it. If you get a player back, fine, but the idea is to get that off the roster and create some more flexibility. And so for that reason, I'm going to check the box score every day, hoping he's producing, hoping he has some crazy stat line 3-4 weeks from now. Teams will have injuries, needs will open up, and someone desperate for a bat may come and get him. But he's got to have, he's got to rake this spring. He's got to.
I get what Nick is saying, and it seems like the expectation is at some point Devers will go to DH, whether that happens by opening day, whether it happens in April or May when Campbell gets called up, if he doesn't make the team. So I'm just wondering, I mean, there is a possibility. I guess what I'm wondering is this. If Yoshida is swinging a good bat, is it absolutely imperative that Christian Campbell makes the team on opening day?
I think there's a better chance Masataka Yoshida is in left field and Willy Abreu starts the year on the IL than Devers playing third base on opening day.
It's an interesting point.
Just kind of how I see it right now. Because Willy Abreu still hasn't played in a spring training game either, just like Devers hasn't. So we don't know what happens with that. I know he's been sick or he has an illness, but he still hasn't played baseball yet. So we don't know how far away he is.
Well, he did get cleared for full baseball activities on Friday. So I don't think he's too far off. And I think he could get ramped up. You got like 3.5 weeks still before opening day. But that is a good point. And Abreu has options as well. So you could, you know, Worcester could essentially be extended spring training for him. But go ahead, Jeremy.
I mean, I know this is kind of a cop-out, Terry, but these things kind of have a way of working themselves out. You know, you go in with six pitchers this year and you're wondering who's going to be in the rotation, and Crawford's probably not going to be available, and it worked itself out, assuming everyone else stays healthy. And that's the way I look at these things as you progress through March. My big thing with Campbell is not to rush him. Like, I think the roster is in its best place with him at second, Bregman at third, and Devers DHing. But I just read an article, I can't remember who it was, 3 days ago, that he doesn't look ready. I think in that same period of time, Hamilton was making a real impact in a couple of games. And so I think if you get into a position where you're potentially forcing Hamilton at a time when he's not right, I think you can get by with other options within the organization and still have the balance of the lineup the way you want it to.
I personally think there's a good chance Campbell does not make the team. And so that keeps Yoshida on the team. Now, Nick does make an interesting point. If you can find a way to get Yoshida into the lineup in left field and he plays adequately, that will also boost his trade value. Now, his throwing program hasn't been fully ramped up. I think he's only throwing at 45 feet right now. So that will have to, you know, increase obviously over the next 3.5 weeks for him to be able to get into the lineup and into left field. But I don't know. I just, you look at, I don't have the numbers up. I meant to have them up, but he hit what, 7 home runs last year and was around 20 the year before that. So if he's not damaged goods this year, you know, in terms of his health, I don't see that teams won't necessarily think that Yoshida is just a guy that carries no value. I think he can definitely help a roster, specifically a team that's looking for a lefty. So he hit 10 home runs last year. How many in 23? I think it was right around, No, it was only 15. Okay. I thought he was up around 20. But I don't know. I'm having a hard time seeing him be straight up DFA'd if he's super productive.
He's not going to be, but you know, I don't think he's capable of playing a left field that increases his value. He can't throw. Even when he's healthy, he can't throw, and he's not athletic at all. He runs like he has to remember to be like right leg, left leg, right leg, left leg. He just, everything just looks so mechanical and something through training, not natural ability on the defensive side. So I his value is solely in my position in his left-handed swing.
Let's say Willy Abreu is fine to start the season and he plays right field almost every day. Which one of these players are you DFAing over Masataka Yoshida? Romy Gonzalez, David Hamilton, Vaughn Grissom. And then you have to take a backup catcher and you have to take Rob Refsnyder. So those two guys are automatically on the roster. So there's like four guys for two spots. And it's Romy Gonzalez, the only one who could play first base. And if you're not committing to Campbell at second base, you probably have to take the platoon of Vaughn Grissom and David Hamilton.
I think it's still Romy. You know, if you have to go get a Dom Smith type guy, if Casas goes down, then so be it. But I just think Hamilton has way too much value. Very good defender. Had a good bat last year. Can come off the bench late in the game and steal a bag almost automatically. I think you have to keep him. And I don't think you can pull the plug on Grissom yet without seeing what he can do with a full healthy season.
Doesn't Grissom have options left?
I believe so.
He has options.
So I don't think you have to DFA him, and I think David that would Hamilton make him the guy.
Face lefties, because I don't let David Hamilton face lefties. I think you have to have a right-handed option in that to hit lefties there. Because I don't think David Hamilton's an everyday player. I don't think he ever will be. I think you have to platoon him at second base. I don't think Christian Campbell is that right-handed hitting guy that only faces the lefties. It would have to be Romy Gonzalez or Vaughn Grissom.
Well, you can
Romy. Vaughn's done nothing to prove that he's a big league player. Nothing.
If this ends up being a code red situation, I mean, you could bring Rafaela into the infield if you had to. If second base was a massive hole, and then you can get Refsnyder into the outfield against lefties. So I don't see it like being overly critical. Like, I mean, we've got a talented roster, so I think we can spare a Romy guy to.
I'm totally fine with David Hamilton to start the year at second base. It's just I'd prefer Campbell. I'd rather go with the high upside guy, let him struggle in the beginning because we have the better roster now. You can afford the struggles and then let him work it out. That's just kind of how I look at it.
Well, I mean, going back to the original question of, you know, whether Yoshida's on the roster or not, I mean, Bregman can play second if Campbell's not up. And I expect that to probably be the case, like almost certainly would be the case.
That makes sense, but they just don't play him there so far.
Well, Rafi just hasn't been able to get in, unless it happened today. But he just hasn't played. He hasn't played, been in game action yet. So I think you're absolutely going to see Bregman at second base for a number of spring training games here over the next 3.5 weeks.
I hope it happens, because if they're going to play him there in the regular season, they have to do it in spring training.
Yeah. Oh, I think they will. Cora said as much last week that Devers will go to third base and, you know, and Bregman will play second, that just in spring training. He wasn't committing to anything, you know, beginning opening day, but I think we'll be okay. Like Jeremy said, things will work themselves out, you know, for the most part, But and I wouldn't rule out Acosta's trade either. You know, I think more likely Yoshida does get moved or isn't on the roster, however it shakes out. But don't rule out Casas. Like, injuries are going to be happening. Executives are going to be looking at their teams thinking, geez, you know, I don't think we have enough right now, and we're missing a piece, and maybe Casas could be that guy. You're probably looking at prospects in return at this point versus an everyday MLB guy. But that's fine. I mean, I think we like what we have, and you know, we can make it work. Well, all right, let's go ahead and shift over. So Roman Anthony was basically quoted today saying, and this was via Alex Speer, that he's only going to sign an extension if it's a no-brainer. And he mentioned, you know, he loves the Red Sox. He, you know, they drafted him. He wants to play here. And he also said, you know, seemingly with confidence, that he's willing to just go year by year. He's like, even the major league minimum to him is a lot of money right now, you know? So, but the key line, he's not going to sign anything if it's not a no-brainer. So, Nick, go ahead. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, that's kind of what I expected. Unless it's at least $100 million-plus over, like, 7 years, I don't think it gets done. And at this point, I don't know if we need to commit to it yet, you know? We have tons of outfielders. If Roman Anthony fits into the outfield, great. I hope he does, and hope it happens this season, but it might not, and I'm willing to wait a little bit at this point. Especially with how he's talking, to have to blow him away with an offer for him to accept it. If he takes a team-friendly deal, then I'm totally okay with it, but it doesn't sound like that's even remotely happening, so even close to happening. So I'm okay with taking it year by year, like he said, and like you said, I think it's okay to wait on this kind of guy. You don't even think he's going to slot into the opening day roster, so I'm not ready to commit to him yet. Maybe next year.
Jeremy?
I've been on record saying this every time this comes up. Can we see him play once in the big league level? Can we see something? And I understand it comes at a risk that the price may go up a little bit, but I'd much rather the price go up than spend on a guy who's a complete dud and, you know, effectively does the Yoshida thing. Sits on your roster, untradeable, you know, causing roster imbalances. And look, I think he's going to be a great player. But I'd rather see the player. I mean, remember, he only played in Worcester for like a month. Like, there's no track record here whatsoever. Now, the second part of this for me is the comments from today. It blows my mind that these guys are willing to risk being a multi-millionaire set for life at the risk of becoming a billionaire. Both can happen, but why are you taking the risk to not have that, like, Rafaela, $50 million. If he's smart with his money, he doesn't have to do anything the rest of his life but play baseball. It just blows my mind that they are willing to take an ACL, an Achilles, a rotator cuff, something that derails that path, and they never get the big payday. It blows my mind. And it's also problematic that we now have two guys on the roster that are saying things like this, because last year this was what Casas is saying. And Casas is an example, by the way, who has almost no value, can't trade him. We can't give him away to free up the spot because of the year he had last year. So he's another guy that I if I'm him and I'm his agent, oh my God, what did we do not go get that contract? Boston, at least as of right now, things would have to drastically change for Casas to be back on a path for a multi-year extension. So to me, it's a layered approach. The comments concern me. The fact that we haven't seen him play at the big league level concerns me. you know, and then simultaneously it blows my mind that he's willing to risk life altering money to essentially prove a point.
That's an interesting observation as well. I mean, I don't know what the Red Sox offered Casas. I'm guessing it was somewhere in the neighborhood of what Rafaela got, which was actually, I think, $68 million over 8 years. But now Casas is stuck getting, what's this? This is probably his last pre-arb season, I think. So he could get 4 or 5 million next year, and then it'll increase upwards after that if he can stay healthy. But and the one guy that comes to mind with Casas to me, and I've mentioned it before, is Rhys Hoskins. You know, I think everybody thought Hoskins was going to sign a 6 to 8 year deal when he hit free agency, and then he blew out his knee and ended up signing with the Phillies for it was a 2 year, $30 million deal guaranteed with an $18 million mutual option for 26 and a $4 million buyout. Like, I could see Casas being that guy when he hits free agency, you know, if he's not super healthy and doesn't have any defensive value at first base. So we'll see. But the one contract that was cited in the Alex Speer article, and it's interesting, is the Jackson Chourio deal. Chourio, when he signed it, was the number 7 ranked prospect in all of MLB. Anthony's number 1 right now. So perhaps, you know, that is a somewhat of a significant difference. But Chourio signed an 8-year deal worth $82 million guaranteed, but there's 2 team options attached to that worth 50 apiece, and then, or I should say 25 apiece rather. And then there's escalators on both of those options that could be worth an extra 5 million more. So it could be 30 apiece in those 2 option years. So it maxes out between potentially 140 to 150 million. That's perfect. If I'm going to do a pre-arb deal, I want him under team control for 10 years. And that's exactly what the Braves did with Acuna, you know, early on, I think during his rookie season. And if Anthony makes the team opening day, and as Nick said, I think there's very little chance that that's going to happen. But let's say he does. The Red Sox would have 6 years of control. If he gets called up beyond the third week in April, and he will at some point, they'll gain an extra year. So that's 7 years of control. So, you know, an 8-year deal with 2 option years, that's perfect. I think that's perfect for both sides. You get 10 years of a stud prospect at relatively team-friendly money. And then he's still going to hit free agency around age 30, 31 and have a chance at a massive deal, you know, like Soto got, like Judge got, you know, somewhere in there. And, you know, Judge got 350, Soto got 7, but that's still massive money. So it's an interesting comp, and Chourio had, you know, he's lived up to the deal so far. I don't know when Wander Franco signed his, but his was worth 188 over 11 years. I think that might have been after his rookie year, and obviously, you know, that didn't turn out well because of the off-the-field stuff, but it is an example of an elite prospect getting paid.
I just think it has to go over 150 mil guarantee if you're going to give Roman Anthony that contract. Just the way he's talked, the way he's ranked higher than Jackson Chourio. I think people believe he's better than Jackson Chourio. I just think you'd have to go higher than that. And I don't know if the Red Sox are comfortable going that high, $160, $170 million guaranteed, to lock up this guy for 10 years. I just don't think it's something they would do, especially because – you would have to put him on the opening day roster if you lock him up now, because the clock started and you're paying him. So you'd have to make more room for him. You'd have to move 2 outfielders Yoshida and then somebody else because Roman Anthony has to start opening day.
Abreu.
I just think it's really hard to do at the moment.
I wouldn't do it for that.
I agree with that.
Yeah, if the guaranteed money exceeds 100, I wouldn't do it. I don't care what the options are. You know, they could be 25 million, they could be 40 million. They're just options. And if you're not going to pick them up, then obviously things didn't work out well. And, you know, so if it approaches one, if it exceeds 100 and especially, you know, approaches 150, I at least make him play a full season. And then, you know, he'll have 6 years hanging over his head. You still got plenty of leverage to get a deal done. It might come at a steeper cost, but I'll be more comfortable giving him, you know, that type of a deal at that point. You know, yeah, this is kind of an apples to oranges comparison, but you, at least with Garrett Crochet, you saw 140 innings of him leading Major League Baseball in strikeouts per nine. So at least I have that to go on when I potentially might have to overpay for him. You've got nothing to go on with Anthony other than the fact he's the number one prospect in all of baseball, and he seems to have a lot of confidence, which, you know, I like to hear that, but not enough to give him a massive deal without seeing a Major League at-bat yet.
I don't got much else. I kind of agree. Don't give him one yet, especially when you have this too many outfielders on the roster. Let the things play out. Let's go to the All-Star break, whatever, early June, May, whatever it is, and then you can call him up and see what happens then.
Yeah, I'll overpay a little bit if he's a stud in his rookie season. Here's one thing that concerns me, though. Christian Campbell is probably off to the side watching how, and he's the number, four ranked prospect in all of Major League Baseball right now, higher than Chorio even was at the time. I'm just worried that Campbell's off to the side looking at how Anthony's handling it, thinking, geez, maybe I ought to bet on myself a little bit. And that's going to, you know, that's going to make it more expensive for the Red Sox.
For sure.
We'll see. I don't know. I think the Red Sox have to choose one going forward to lock up because I don't think they lock up both.
And let's not forget who the owner is and his track record of spending money. That's a huge factor here. And to spend that money blindly in his perception, having no sample size, I see the forward-thinking nature of other teams like the Braves and some of these other teams. That's not John Henry. I don't doubt that the baseball people pitch it. I just don't think he's going to write a check for $160 million for a guy he hasn't seen play baseball yet.
I mean, I think if both deals are less than 100, you know, guaranteed – 100 or less, I should say. I think Henry would do that. I think that's going to
That I agree with. No, and look, he's done it with Rafaela. So I'm not saying he's not going to do it. I specifically used the number like 160, 125, whatever it is. That's a big paycheck to write over a 6-7 year period of time when there's no sample size and your owner's a cheap prick.
Yeah, that's what he is in the last several years. Let's throw out a hypothetical here. Let's say both players essentially live up to the hype.
Yep.
I'm just trying to figure out how to frame this. So they both live up to the hype, Campbell and Anthony. Do you think Henry would rather overpay a little bit on a, you know, a long-term deal pre-arb with those two, or do you think he'd rather go get Vladimir?
Vladimir.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's the big name.
Can we have a third answer be neither? None of the above?
I think Henry likes the toys, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a big name toy. Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell doesn't do anything for him. He's gonna what is he, almost 80 years old?
I think he's
go get the proven guy.
Yeah, I think he's 77.
Yeah, he doesn't care about the guy who's 20 years old coming up. He doesn't care anymore. He'd rather have Vladimir Guerrero Jr., a guy who's he knows who Vladimir Guerrero is. He doesn't know who Roman Anthony is.
I would never complain if we did get Vladimir, but if both those young prospects played to an all-star caliber level, I would probably pivot to just locking them up long-term, honestly.
Well, if they're going to play to an all-star level, sure.
Yeah.
By the way, Nick, I know you're just speaking tongue-in-cheek, but can you imagine if John Henry didn't know who Roman Anthony was? Like, someone's like, how's Roman doing? He's like, who? Like, imagine if that really happened.
I think there's a chance that could happen. Like,
I don't doubt it for a second.
I've heard that name before. Who's that? Like, he'd be like, yeah, is that guy on the Red Sox? I don't think so.
Is he a Red Sox prospect or a Rays prospect? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know he loves the Rays, so. Yeah, all right, well, we'll wrap on that. You know, I wouldn't expect anything to happen with Anthony until at least we approach opening day. So we'll, you know, we'll just kind of keep an eye on that. It hasn't reached elephant in the room status yet. So we'll wrap. But we'll be back tomorrow with, we're going to name it the Red Sox Douchebag Hall of Fame. So douchebag Red Sox players that would make a Hall of Fame if there was one. So I can't wait to give mine. And if you've listened to me for a long time, you know who I'm picking. But should be a fun show. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.